to welcome back our members and welcome to those of you in the audience. We will begin today with a public hearing on House Bill 3104. And Representative Williams, I see you in clear evidence, and so I think we need to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to just come to you briefly and testify on House Bill 3104, which I sponsored truly at the request of certain members of my school board, who simply wish to raise the issue and have a serious discussion about one of the larger expense components of a school district's operation, and that's transportation. I certainly take no particular pride of authorship in the bill and wanted to use it merely as a vehicle to hopefully have a thoughtful discussion in your committee about the role that transportation plays in districts managing their fiscal situation, particularly the way this bill is drafted. Is obviously it would change the mandatory required to provide transportation to an option of providing transportation for students. The conversation came up in my district about at some point even the possibility of charging some transportation fee, as one does an athletic fee or a school lunch fee, which could be managed for low-income families who couldn't afford it and so allow them to get transportation access, but also would help stabilize their ability to know when they were going to provide a bus for how many students and at what rate, as opposed to the methodology that's used now where many buses are only partially filled because they don't know really from one day to the next whether or not they're going to have students on that bus and as a resource management tool. It does seem to me that as we do look at the discussion about mandates, that this is one that would be worthy of some conversation. So I did introduce the bill at their request. I think I hear from several other people who obviously think that the bill in its current form goes too far, but I hope it will be at least a discussion point for the committee as you evaluate the options that are in front of us long-term about the kind of discretion we might wish to give to districts to be able to address these issues. Some districts with long distances would have a very different situation that they would have to deal with as opposed to districts that are more close in that could manage the situation in perhaps a unique new way that would allow them to better manage their operations. And so that was the purpose for which I brought the bill forward. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any of the questions you might have. And then after that, if I could, I'd like to be excused to return to the Judiciary Committee, which is also meeting at this time.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I understand some of the need for some discussions on these things and that you probably don't intend for the day-to-day transportation to go through as it's stated here, but I'm a little curious about the activities part. If this were to be left optional to districts to take kids to football games or track meets or whatever, how would you then support or find a way to take care of the kids whose parents couldn't pick them up and take them or pool or something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, I think that's an excellent point. I think that you would manage it sort of the way we manage so many other things in the process. We already charge for most of these people to participate in some sort of extracurricular activity, or at least in my districts, they're charged some additional component to participate in some extracurricular activity, and perhaps the transportation component would be added in as part of that overall charge if you were going to be participating in some sort of a traveling away team, or whether it was a choir competition or some other thing, that would simply be folded into the otherwise balanced activity fee. I know that a number of districts in my area, and I'm sure in yours as well, are suspending some of those activities right now where buses and trips that were planned to those kinds of regional activities are being eliminated as a result of budget cuts, and part of the basis of that is obviously the costs associated with transportation. So, it would again be a function of a local school board where I think that decision is best made to listen to the parents and listen to the school and then to weigh those options and making a determination about how that approach it.
Follow up.
sitting aside that some are reimbursed by the state and some aren't, are you aware of the bill in the Senate that has recently, I think, passed out of committee, although it may be going back for some technical reasons, that actually increases the rate of reimbursement for some of the rural districts? And if you are aware of it, would you care to comment? And if you're not, I just made you aware of it.
And you'd like me to comment. Representative Hobson, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not familiar with the details of that bill. Can you tell me, Representative Hobson, which committee the bill came out of?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Senator Deckert's committee, and the concept behind it is that some of the districts that are very, very large geographically in eastern Oregon spend a larger portion, even though the reimbursement is 70% or 80%, that still takes a larger proportional chunk out, just balancing that out. So the bill actually raises the reimbursement for select districts to, I think it raises it to 90%, 80% or 90%. There's an increase there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, I think it just underscores the continuing challenge that we have as we try to balance, with limited resources, the needs of education system-wide. Whether it's rural districts on transportation issues, or whether it's a small schools issue, or whether it's districts like mine, which are in high-growth areas who are struggling to meet the operational expenses of building construction and dealing with additional students, it demonstrates that I think we have a system that fundamentally is broken, and that we then pick each other off in the process as we move through this. I don't necessarily suggest that I think we ought to abolish some allotment of resources for transportation to school districts, but I do think that you ought to allow local districts to determine how best to manage that. And in the local district, if their determination is that they want to start, assessing some amount of a cost to manage their overall transportation needs within a district for students, I think we ought to be willing to, especially given our circumstances, be open-minded enough to recognize that there are other ways we can approach this issue. And it is a mandate, and it's one of the more expensive mandates on a district, and I think we ought to be willing to talk about it. In the long term, as the representative knows, because we sit next to each other in the House Revenue Committee, in the long term, we're not going to solve this problem by these short-term fixes and by the poaching of resources from one size of districts to another size of districts, or from one geographical part of the state to another geographical part of the state. We'll fix this problem eventually when we're willing in this building to get realistic about the scope of the problem and about the likely and very limited solutions that I think present themselves to us. But until then, I think we're going to have to try to do this patchwork approach to trying to solve problems. And this bill is, just as I said, a jumping-off point for discussion about how we manage district transportation requirements and whether or not we ought to give districts more flexibility.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill to us. I think the discussion is something we need to have. And my question, I believe, is rhetorical, but you could educate me, and I may learn something. Are you aware of any other state services where we provide transportation to get to the service?
Representative Nolan, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I know through my involvement with a large population of seniors in my community that there are various programs which are generally a public partnership with some public transportation resources which provide senior transportation to services like doctors, clinics, mm-hmm. hospitals, and the like, where typically those seniors are also qualifying for some sort of subsidized medical assistance through the Oregon Health Plan or some other program. So that would be an example, I think, representative of a program where we do provide some service. Now, I will tell you, most of those are in partnership with some other nonprofit. So, for example, I know in my area, the Red Cross runs a shuttle bus service in association, I think, with the Washington County aging folks. using some state transportation dollars to subsidize some of that money. And it's one of those, you know, examples of six or seven funding sources with a nonprofit trying to provide those services. That's the best one I can come up with off the top of my head, Representative Golan. With a little effort, I might be able to think of another one, but I can't right at this moment.
It's a good point, and I had actually not thought of that one. But if I recall, we don't require counties to provide that service, but maybe I need to do a little exploring before I make a statement. Thanks.
You bet.
Representative, this bill was, by your own admission, brought to you by a school administrator. Do you have any...
School board members, Mr. Chairman.
School board members. Do you have any idea, is this your idea or that idea at all widespread? Is it a metropolitan concept, or is it just limited to the one school district or the school board member of the school district? Or how would you assess the interest?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not sure that I would be in a position to... I certainly will tell you that I haven't had my phone ringing or my email full of messages from other school boards saying, we love this idea, go get them. So my conversation really was at a sort of think tank kind of a discussion with a number of the school board members in my district as we were talking about various issues. And I think they have seriously had board members who have raised and considered the possibility of some different approach to addressing transportation issues within the district. And, you know, I think sometimes it's worthy of following up on some of those veins to determine whether or not if there's anything there that you can strike that might actually make a difference. And so I indicated that I would be happy to introduce the bill, if only to raise the issue to the attention of the committee and to hopefully engender a thoughtful discussion about how we're approaching transportation issues and about a need by districts to deal with a transportation issue perhaps differently on a district-by-district basis than is currently being done. And that was the basis. But I don't know that it's been broadly even supported by all of the members of the school district that I represent.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, would I be correct then in paraphrasing this somewhat as a result of your think tank experience that you see this as one of many topics that should be on the agenda when we or some group as a body is looking at the long-term funding solution in general, and you don't want to see this get lost, but to be a part of that discussion?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, I think that's a good way to describe it, as the committee knows, and I am sorry that I wasn't able to be here the day you heard testimony on the bill that Representative Hobson and I co-sponsored to discuss the issue of school district. I think the word we're using now is reorganization, because consolidation apparently has a bad connotation to it. But the discussion about those issues, I think it is. It's one of many things. As you're looking at the entire broader scope of mandates, the issue of governance, potentially governance restructuring on how we manage this issue, as the Revenue Committee is trying to look at different ways to approach the possible funding issues, I think it is an issue, and it's an expensive issue, and it's one that ought not to be lost and that we ought to at least revisit as a matter of policy, it seems to me. And I do hope it does engender some discussion among the committee about if there is any other approach that might be taken with respect to transportation issues that might make more sense for districts who want to be able to do something different than as is currently mandated to them by the state.
Okay, well, you've raised the issue, and thank you for coming in. And
thank you, Representative Backlund. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it.
Ed Edwards is signed up.
We're still on paper one.
Thank you, Chair Backlund, members of the committee. My name is Ed Edwards. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Oregon School Employees Association. I'm going to make my comments fairly brief, to the point. Student transportation is one of our top priorities for our organization. We represent a few thousand professionally trained school bus drivers throughout the state of Oregon, working in school districts throughout the state. And I'm here today to speak in opposition to 3104, which, if passed, in as far as Oregon school employees is concerned, will pretty much, it will end the mandate that requires school districts to provide student transportation to and from schools for nearly 200,000 students every day. This is not a small service that is provided to parents and to students. It is very big. Just to remind the committee, during the 1991 legislative session, that's when the mandate was passed, and it was passed for exactly the same reasons as Representative Williams brought out. School districts facing budget shortfalls were looking at student transportation as an area to make cuts. The options that they had in those areas, what they explored and some implemented, was a fee-based transportation system. In some districts, got very close to actually closing down their student transportation to students and requiring parents to bring their children to school. OSCA supports the current law. We think it's a very good law. It needs to be expanded in some areas, especially in rural communities who are hit hard on the transportation funding. We also believe that it's just not a matter of money, it's also a matter of safety. We require students of Oregon to go to school, K through 12. And the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration has declared many, many times that the school bus is the safest form of ground transportation there is. We have a responsibility when we want our children in school. We shouldn't pass legislation that gives them the reasons to be absent. We want our children to have equal access to schools. We shouldn't pass legislation that denies access or makes it difficult to get access to public education. And for a lot of students today, that means getting on a bus and being transported to school. We think that this particular bill is bad legislation. It's not positive in regards to the education of Oregon's children, and we would urge the committee to reject this.
Okay, Ed, thank you very much. John Marshall.
Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I spent 24 hours last week in what might be one of the most depressing days that I've spent since I've represented the interests of public schools, and that was listening to the testimony before the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means talk about an appropriation that currently is under discussion in this building and its impact on schools. I heard about staff that would be reduced, programs eliminated, individuals pink slipped, class sizes increasing, and it wasn't very pleasant. And as I think about how school districts will face the challenge if that appropriation does in fact become a reality, it seems to me that everything that schools do ought to be on the table for discussion. And now we currently have, in effect, what may be, apart from special education, one of the largest unfunded mandates, and that is the requirement that we provide home-to-school transportation. And it's not just the requirement that we do so, it's a requirement in statute that we transport students in high school that live more than a mile and a half, or students in elementary school more than a mile. I won't suggest that we ought not provide transportation, but I believe that local school boards and their communities, in deciding priorities inside that community and making decisions about electives that would have to be eliminated, music programs, art programs, programs that serve the needs of our students that need the most help, it seems to me that the idea of transportation ought to be on the table. And it ought to be discussed in the context of the needs of a particular community and the locally elected board deciding how to prioritize limited resources amongst all these competing needs. And to assume that transportation is all of a sudden set aside and not on the table, I don't think it's fair to those local school boards that have to make the decision. So we would encourage you to give House Bill 3104 some serious consideration in light of where we are. And it would seem to me unconscionable that home-to-school transportation, because of its mandated status, would become the most well-funded program we have left in elementary secondary schools. And while, again, I'm not suggesting that home-to-school transportation be eliminated, this bill doesn't do that. It merely allows locally elected officials to look at school transportation in the context of larger budget decisions they have to make about the programs and services that they're going to ultimately provide to the students in their own communities. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Lockin?
Since you're representing the local jurisdictions that would be making these decisions, what's your guess on what would happen to transportation if we put it back on the table?
I would, Representative Avakian, I would very much doubt if transportation would be totally eliminated. I think some different kinds of decisions might be made. Kinds of decisions relating to where students live, their ability to get to school on their own, these walk zones that are now mandated in statute, a mile for elementary schools, a mile and a half for high school students, and certain decisions might be made to adjust those walk zones. Maybe transportation wouldn't be provided to the extent that it currently is. But again, I think that transportation ought to be on the table in discussion with the other programs and services that school districts provide, and trust those local citizens to make the best decisions they possibly can to balance the budget, their own budgets, within limited resources.
Follow-up?
Mr. Edwards brought up the notion of safety and that maybe this isn't akin to a lot of the other regular school programs because it involves the safety of children. Do you see that as an important factor?
Not really, Representative Avakian. Transportation, there will still be requirements for certification and licensing of bus drivers. There will still be requirements for a certain level of maintenance of school buses. So the question is not necessarily one of safety. It really becomes the extent to which you're going to provide that service and to how many students you're going to provide that service.
Well, I took the issue of safety not to be the competence of drivers or the quality of the bus, but the fact that you're going to have massive amounts of students that are going to be riding their bike and walking on the sides of roads, and many more vehicles on the road at certain hours taking their kids back and forth, and that creates a safety hazard that we don't currently have.
And I would argue, Representative Avakian, that those issues ought to be more appropriately discussed at a local school board level.
Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions here. We always enter into the haves and the have-nots and the whole equalization piece. How would you attend to the problem of a rich district determining that they really didn't need to provide transportation because their kids had options, and a poor district, and then not overlooking the students in that particular district who don't have the resources to get there?
I would suggest, Representative Hobson, that there may be that mix of students within individual school districts. And I would not assume that a school district with a higher socioeconomic status would decide not to provide transportation, and a school district in a lower, with lower socioeconomic status students would decide to continue to provide transportation. Again, I think from a local school board's perspective, they would have to look at the mix of students, the kind of transportation they provide, where the students live, and come up with a rational approach to providing that home-to-school transportation.
Follow-up?
No, Mr. Chair, it's a totally new question.
Mm. Representative Hobson, ask your entire new question.
Sure, the protocol. Putting aside the safety of students issue, are you aware of any place in the country that has looked at public transportation in the urban areas as a possible source for working together with the schools and the cities and using public transportation to get kids to school where it's possible?
Representative Hobson, I am, and I believe here in Oregon, the Portland School District provides, in lieu of transportation, provides bus passes to some of its students because of the transportation structure of TriMet. And I believe in Eugene, they also have a similar arrangement. Whether or not there's anything like that here in Salem, I don't know. But certainly I think in urban areas where there's a more extensive public transportation system, the schools do rely on that. What kind of partnerships the school district has with the transportation provider, I don't know, other than what I've suggested in Oregon.
Thank you.
Representative Dalton?
Oh, just reflecting back on my upbringing, I grew up in Manhattan, of course, but I can't think of ever taking a school bus. I can think of taking plenty of subways past Yankee Stadium and local city buses with lots of bus passes, but never a school bus.
You probably skipped school and just got off to go watch the ball game.
I will not deny that.
I would say if you're going to skip school, that would be a good cause. That's my own personal observation. Well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate your views. With that, then, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3104. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3557. Jim, you want to do a staff summary for us?
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 3557 exempts public charter schools that are operated by school districts from the requirement that public charter schools must be established as nonprofit organizations. Declares emergency, becomes effective on passage.
Okay. Jim Green. What's that TV show, Help Me Committee Members, where the host says, come on down? I kind of thought of that.
Right.
The Price is Right, as you came walking to the point you are now.
So the question, Mr. Chair, is the price right?
I think we need... I think that's a good question, and I think we need to find that out. So. Jim, I'm sorry. We've diverted him.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman. I was hoping to hear the number myself. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. You have my written testimony in front of you for the record. I just kind of wanted to tell you the idea behind House Bill 3557 and the reason some of my members approached me to introduce the bill. Back in 1999, when we passed the charter school law, the discussions focused really on outside groups, folks from outside the district, parents, interested community members starting charter schools. We really didn't even think about it, to be honest with you, that school districts would, on their own volition, start charter schools, not only be the sponsor, but also be the applicant. And we're seeing that now. School districts are using the charter school law to access some federal money that's available and also get some waivers from some laws that they felt they needed in order to create the program. And when we passed Senate Bill 100, one of the things we put in the law was that for folks who wanted to start a charter school, they had to become a nonprofit corporation under Oregon's nonprofit corporation law. And the reason we did that was we wanted to know who the governing body was. They have to publicly file with Secretary of State's office. They also have to file their articles of incorporation and their bylaws so you know what their governance structure was. And we felt, at least the legislature did and we did in supporting the bill, that that was very important. We also put a requirement in there that they apply for 501c3 status from the Internal Revenue Service so folks who donated to them could receive the tax deduction for donating to an educational entity. School districts obviously have locally elected school boards, so we know what their governing board is. You, as the legislature, create the laws they have for how they govern those school districts. And when an individual in most cases makes a donation to schools, because they are a governmental entity for educational purposes, they get the tax deduction. However, when a charter school or when a school district wanted to start charter schools, all of a sudden I started getting calls saying, is it true we really need to form a new nonprofit board? We already have this locally elected school board here. And I looked down the law and I said, sure enough, you do. Currently under our law, even if a school district, everybody was in agreement, and we do have some now in Oregon. I think we have three or four that are up and running, and we have probably at least 10 more in the works, where the school district wants to start the charter school. They've had to go around and try to recruit folks to serve on a nonprofit board, which is not always easy. They've also had to hire an attorney or an accountant to file 501c3 status forms for them. Those aren't easy. Becoming a nonprofit corporation is pretty easy. But the 501c3 status has been a stumbling block. Really, the impetus for this came from the Center for Advanced Learning, which is, I think I testified earlier this session of the committee, the conglomeration of three school districts up in the East Metro area, Gresham Barlow, Centennial, Corbett, Mount Hood Community College. They came together to form Center for Advanced Learning. And it's an idea that they wanted to come together to provide high school credits towards the CAM, but individually they couldn't do it. Each district didn't have the ability, so for the economy of scales, they came together to do it. Gresham Barlow wanted to be the sponsor. They wanted to be the applicant. Jim Buck, who was the assistant superintendent there, said, well, let's do it. Let's get this done. They had a problem in that they couldn't find anybody really eager to serve on their nonprofit board other than the folks that wanted to be involved in the school, and they wanted to know whether a bill could be introduced to eliminate that requirement for a nonprofit corporation status to be created and a 501c3 status when the school district is not only the sponsor but the applicant. And that's the mere change this bill makes. I don't believe this would cause any great concern out there in the education community. I've spoken to most of the education community, and I haven't heard any opposition. I've spent time with the Department of Education on it, and I don't believe they're in opposition to it. I've also spoken with Rob Kramer and his group. They are in support of the bill. This bill also would help the Paisley School District. They're a very small school district down in Lake County. They're looking at becoming Oregon's first charter school district. They're allowed to do that because they're a single building school district. And Joni Gillis from the Department of Education and I have spent a lot of time with that community. They've had four or five community meetings where their gymnasium at the high school has been packed. And that community has decided that, at least in the short term, the federal money can save them and they won't be squeezed out under our funding formula and our problem of funding public schools right now. And they want to become a charter school district. And the mere fact for them is that there's a significant amount of federal money available to them that they need in order to keep their programs viable in their rural part of the state. And they have a locally elected board. They like their board. The community does. And they'd like to have that board continue on and not have to waste time and energy to create a new nonprofit status and also get a 501c3 status. That's what the bill does. Hopefully you can support it today. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
I've got several.
Yes, Representative Bakken, yes.
Let me make sure I understand the premise of the bill first. It sounds like this would allow school districts, public bodies, to contract with themselves in order to create either a new school or to turn over an existing traditional school into a charter school. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vakian, that's correct. It's essentially, other than the fact of applying for the federal grant that may be available to charter schools, it's essentially what we have in our alternative education statute right now. School districts can create their own programs by contracting with themselves for alternative education.
Which is a different process than chartering.
Yes, it is a little bit different.
Other than using this method in order to grab the federal dollars, what other public policy does it serve in chartering the school in this manner rather than just opening up a new traditional public alternative school?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vakian, I think what public good it would serve is the question you're getting to. What public good does it serve to create a to not have the nonprofit or create a charter school and not use the other?
Well, other than grabbing the federal money, what other reason is there to do it this way?
Well, there would be a couple of other reasons. One would be the availability of the buy-in from the kids and the parents and the staff, because remember, to work in a charter school is voluntary. We can't place staff there. And for students to go, it's voluntary. We can't say you're in the attendance boundary of there, so you must go. So it's a public school of choice. Secondarily, charter schools don't have to comply with all rules and regulations that alternative schools have to or our regular public schools do. Now, there is a list, and I testified earlier this session to it, of what we call the list of unwaivables, and that's the federal law, obviously, health and safety of kids, expenditure of public funds, municipal audit law, and also charter schools have to comply with our content standards and take the statewide assessment. So it is to get the federal money. It's to allow for greater buy-in from parents and students. and also for some flexibility in some of our state laws and regulations.
With regard to the regulations and laws, this body has passed a set of laws that govern public education, and the charter school law is exempted from many of those laws. And it sounds like what this bill is asking us to do is to say, even though we passed certain standards through these laws for public schools that we want them to adhere to, I don't mean educational standards, I mean administrative standards through the existing laws, that we're going to say we're going to now allow a public school district to contract with itself and then sidestep all of those laws simply by chartering rather than opening another school, which is different than a outside body coming in and contracting. We're going to say we're going to allow the government entity to contract with itself and exempt itself from the very laws we passed to govern it. Isn't that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Avakian, that's right. However, this law does not prohibit a school district from creating a charter school. All they have to do is form a nonprofit corporation and the 501c3 status, and they could do all that. The check, though, I believe, is the fact that these are public schools. You have a locally elected school board. You have administrators and parents who pay attention to it. We deal with two things in public schools that people hold near and dear, and that's their kids and their money. And believe me, if you screw up with either one of those as a school board or an administrator or a teacher, you hear about it loud and clear.
Well, I think we could have I really am almost done, Mr. Chair.
That's fine. You're fine. No.
I think we could have a good debate on whether or not our public charter school law really does create public schools. I don't believe that. But with this particular bill, this is different than many of the charter schools that we've seen before in that it's allowing an existing school, a school district, to, in essence, sponsor its own charter school that it's going to manage, as opposed to having an outside independent board management, and still take advantage of the exemption from the laws.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vakian, not really, because that's available now. All this bill does is to say that they don't have to go through an additional step of creating this nonprofit board. They could go ahead and create the nonprofit board and have it be their locally elected school board. This does not prohibit, and we currently have, the availability for school districts under our law to create their own charter schools.
I didn't wonder what the value in this law is if they can do it already, but I'm done with my question. I know Representative Nolan can answer. So.
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Avakian asked a couple of the questions that I have. Mr. Green, you referenced one particular district, and I think you have others who have in mind to use this potential. And you said that for some of them, the way I heard it was the primary reason for chartering the entire district is to grab some federal money. My understanding of that federal money is that it is time limited, not to be used for operational expenses. It is for capital and other startup. So my question to you is, can you commit to us that those districts would not come back to this legislature in 3 years when that federal money disappears and ask for a bailout or some other exemption that changes the formula so that they can keep getting state money at the level that the federal grant had provided?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, I can't give you that assurance because I can't say how we're going to fund schools in Oregon in the next 3 years, let alone in the next 2 years. We may have a number of schools, whether they're charter school districts or not, coming forward and asking for exemptions. This is an opportunity, at least in one district's limited experience, that without this, they will go away. They have said to their community, we do not have the funding necessary to maintain our programs that we need. They went to their largest employer in their district, which is the Federal Forest Service, and said, we've got a problem. We may have to close down, and we'll have to send our kids either to Lakeview or Northlake School District. And the Forest Service said, that's fine. We'll close down our shop. Essentially, to those folks out there, that meant the death of their little community. They were looking at any straw they could grab onto to keep their school open, keep their community alive, and they realize it's for a limited duration. What they're hoping is that the 90 of you here in this building will step to the plate either this time around or very soon and fund schools at the level we all know we should be funding schools at.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Mr. Green, can you remind me, how many students are enrolled in Paisley?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, I think the last time I checked it was about 110 students, maybe. But that also included their international residential students. So I think it's actually a lot less than that that are real residents of the district. They recruited students internationally to come. They created a boarding school to try to save their school a couple of years ago. They've since stopped that. I think they're down to about 65 to 80 kids, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay, another follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Quick arithmetic, and don't hold me to this. 60 kids, $300,000 over 3 years. That's about $5,000 per student, about $1,700 a year per student. So my question is, does Paisley have a way to make that up when the federal money dries up?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, when I traveled out to Paisley, that was the exact point I made to them. That one of the things, if you receive an application from an outside group, you've got to be sure that it's going to be viable when that money goes away. Are you going to continue to be viable, or are you just hanging on by threads? I believe the superintendent, that board, and that community are going to do everything they can in order to keep it viable. They see it as one chance to get some federal dollars that they haven't been able to access, and they are also pursuing, because once they become a charter school, there's other grants available to them. They're going to the Gates Foundation. They're also going to the Johnson Foundation, and predicated on that is that you're a charter school. They have certain grants set up, and those are longer duration. The Gates Foundation has funded charter schools in excess of 20 years, and they're hoping for that as well. They believe that this is their chance to survive, and when they ask me to bring it, and believe me, even if this law, if this bill doesn't become law, they'll still go forward with it. It's just a cumbersome step in the process that they're looking at. Their board and their community, they like their locally elected school board. They want to continue to serve. They just saw it as a cumbersome step, having to hire a lawyer and also having to file that with the IRS. They wanted to see if they could eliminate those steps because of limited resources. They didn't think it was a good way to spend their money.
No more questions, but I just am concerned that I respect that you are trying to solve one community or a few communities' issues, but we are missing the entire picture, the system statewide. If we give solutions to individuals, it gets back to the point Representative Williams made, that we are piecemealing out the entire state system.
And, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nolan, I don't want you to think that that's the sole reason school districts are doing this. That's one limited district in one instance. And believe me, our association, folks I work for, won't piecemeal out this solution. They want a statewide solution to the issue. And we need to come together as a state, need to come together with the legislature, and figure out how we're going to do that. That hasn't happened yet. We're working on processes to do that throughout this building and throughout the state, and it needs to occur. But when a community is faced with what Paisley was faced with, they're going to go ahead and go forward with it. This bill just eliminates a couple of steps along the way, and they could still get a waiver from the state board to do exactly what this bill does. I wanted to be up front and come to the folks that make those decisions, the legislature, and say, let's try to change the statute if we can.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Looks like that's it for the sign-up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Committee, I would be very frank and indicate that when we came into the room today, into the hearing room, I anticipated that we would move this to a work session. But I think there are some concerns that have been raised. And I know that we don't have an awful lot of time, but I think probably in view of these concerns, we should give some time to pause and think about it. So I think we're not going to go into work session today. So I think with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3557. House Joint Resolution 41 is due up next Monday, not today. So I hope no one is here for that reason. If that's the case, I apologize profusely. I'm very sorry about that. Anyway, with that, we've gone through our agenda today, and we will adjourn the meeting.